Well, we started this series a little while ago, and there's been a few things in between part two and part three, but here we go, the last one. When we visit our eldest daughter, Amy, in Cardiff, we frequently go somewhere called the Red Dragon Centre. Anybody come across it? It's got good places to eat. Yeah. It's where the cinema is. And in the Red Dragon Centre, there's a bowling alley. And attached to this, sort of, is an amusement arcade. And it's been a popular place for us, not for the slot machines, I hasten to add. But over the years, you know, as the girls are growing up, we played many a game of air hockey in there, or we go and play pool. And for many years, Bethany and I would frequent the place because it was the home of the Doctor Who exhibition. You know, in the arcade, many games in there, if you do well at them, they spew out this long stream of tickets. And when you've collected enough of these tickets, you can go and claim your prize from the guy at the ticket counter. And the more tickets you have, the better prize you get. Well, there's one game in there that I usually head for. And I suppose it's the modern equivalent of the coconut shy, as you've got these targets, and you've got all these foam rubber balls that come down this ramp thing towards you. And the aim of the game is to gather these up as quickly as you can, take aim, and throw the balls at the targets, you see. You knock as many as you can over before the time runs out. Well, one week when we were down there, we visited the Red Dragon Centre a number of times. Now, thanks to endless hours of cricket practice as a boy, I managed to hit enough of these targets, as well as putting a few windows through. But I won enough of these tickets to qualify for what I was convinced was a major prize, at least a Porsche or something, right? Caribbean holiday, maybe, you know. Anyway, I reckoned I had at least 1,000 of these things. And before you go and cash them in, you have to feed them into another machine, and it counts them all out, and then you get a little printout to say how many there are, you see. So I strode confidently up to the ticket counter, wondering from which direction my Porsche was going to be appearing from. When the guy collects in my ticket with a total of all my tickets, and he hands me, in exchange for this, he hands me a pencil. And the pencil didn't even have a rubber on the end. He said that would have been another 500 tickets. So I'm walking away, mumbling, curse you, ticket counter man. Yeah. But, you see, what I hadn't realized all that week, that I'd been accumulating more and more tickets, was that they were, apart from receiving a pencil, they were all pretty much worthless. Now, I've learned a lot from the two talks given by Steve and given by Tony. I've learned a lot from the two talks that we've had so far in this series about giving. And I've also learned a lot from this book. It's called Open Hands, Open Heart, and it's written by a friend of mine called Ivor Williams. Now, it's Ivor's son, Kevin, that many of us have been praying for recently. And over the years, I've learned even more than that from some very generous and some very, very cheerful givers. I mean, just look at this fund for the Mexico thing. It's been truly outstanding. And I've learned a lot from people that have given to that and various other things over the years. I've been very blessed. One of the things I've learned is that people who are trying really hard to follow Jesus, they stop collecting tickets. They don't do nice things for Jesus thinking they'll get a bunch of tickets that they can trade one day for a prize of grace. This is because they don't think that grace is something that we can trade good conduct for. They don't collect a load of stuff that has got no value to God. And they seem to shun attention because they don't need it anymore. They realize that bright lights don't need spotlights. But instead, they see every act of selfless love every act of giving, whether that is their money or time or their gifts or their energy or their talent or their emotional energy or anything else that you can give, they see that as a declaration of their faith and their love for Jesus. They've come to see that giving has its own reward simply because it pleases God. They're so full of love for others that they've also stopped counting how many tickets other people have got. They're so busy engaging with what God is doing in the world. They're so busy being love that it simply doesn't matter anymore. I feel that the two talks we've had so far have been so helpful, so thorough, and so well delivered that firstly, I'd urge you to go and listen to them again. And secondly, it'd be a little bit pointless of me to rehash them and deliver it to you all over again. Now, I'm not saying that there's nothing more to say. There is a lot more to learn. We're learning all the time. If you're anything like me, you've always got the L plates on. And I would definitely, definitely recommend to you this book. And I'll gladly get copies if anybody's interested, okay? So I'm going to talk quite briefly this morning. That's the most popular thing anybody can ever say from the frontier, isn't it? I'm going to talk quite briefly. It's going to be a summary, really. And then we'll see how we're getting on as to what we do next. Maybe you heard the old story about the church treasurer who stands up at the church meeting and says, "Well, folks, I've got good and bad news. The good news is that we have all the money we need to pay the bills, pay the workers, and run the church. The bad news is, it's still in your pockets." It's one thing to joke about such things, but it's quite another to recognize the truth and respond in faith. And quite often we have all the resources we need. Quite often that is money, but how willing are we to let go and to give, trusting that the Lord will provide? It's a real faith stretcher, isn't it? It's one thing to learn what the Bible teaches, as we have been doing in the series so far, but it's another thing to put it into practice. Jesus said that everyone who heard his teaching and put it into practice was like a wise person who built their house on a rock. In order to do that, he or she would have to dig down into the rock to lay firm foundations. It would be hard work. It'd be much more tempting to find an easier place to build. But in the end, it was most definitely worth all the effort. And we always need to be realistic. Christians who exhibit a new attitude marked with compassion and generosity are to be admired. But not everyone can claim to be like Zacchaeus or like the early church on the day of Pentecost. To be honest, a lot more of us are like Ananias or Sapphira in that we do give, but more often than not, we keep most of it back for ourselves. In 2016, the Evangelical Alliance stated, "Statistics suggest that most Christians give away 2% or less of their income, with a small percentage never giving at all." And what holds many of us back, I think, is our fear that if we give away too much, then we ourselves will be left wanting. We want soft hearts of compassion, but are struggling to trust God as the great provider. And this is where it can be good to grasp the nettle of tithing. Now, in the book I referred to, the one by Ivor Williams, he tells the story of when he was the newly appointed minister of Broadhaven Baptist Church. Now, one of the things that he did when he was the newly appointed minister was to suggest that the church should start to tithe its income. Well, he says that he was constantly met by those who responded to his idea with the phrase, "Charity begins at home." Now, in my experience, that is a phrase which often means that charity does begin at home, yes, and it often stays at home. What they meant was that the church had an obligation, sure, to pay its workers and all its regular bills, of course. And It would be dishonest to start giving money away if it didn't have enough to meet its own responsibilities. Now, that way of approaching things sounds fine, but there's also some scriptural principles to add into that, isn't there? You know, as Christians, are we going to attempt our various responsibilities in our own strength, or are we going to put God first and start to do things His way? Ultimately, it comes down to saying our way or God's way, our needs or the needs of others. And in that sort of situation, Jesus' answer is always very simple. Seek first His kingdom, Matthew 6, 33. Seek first His kingdom and His righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. Well, some years ago, the same question was raised in this church. Should we tithe our income? Many of you will know the outcome of that discussion. And since then, if you've served the church on the tithing team, you'll know only too well what the decision was. And I don't say this now in any way at all that's a proud point of view, but purely as an encouragement now to those who at the time made that decision and to those who've maintained that principle ever since. Have we ever gone without? Have we ever not been provided for? Have there been those in the town and further afield that we've been able to build a bridge with through being able to give to them, both as a church and as individuals? We're challenged. In Ivo's book, he challenges us because he takes it a little further. He says, whilst tithing is a sound principle, he says, could it actually be more than that? Could tithing become the vehicle that actually propels further generosity forward? Let me explain a bit about what that means. He says, if we're going to journey towards real Christian giving, then tithing, he says, is just a good place to start. You see, tithing helps us develop good habits. Not just good habits about giving sacrificially on a regular basis, but good habits in the way that we think about God and we think about the poor. The Living Bible's translation of Deuteronomy 14:23 puts it like this. It says, the purpose of tithing is to teach you to always put God first in your lives. The purpose of tithing is to teach you to always put God first in your lives. Just imagine this for me, right? Let's say rich generosity is a spacecraft. And tithing, so tithing being the principle of giving a set percentage of your income. And can I just add a little aside here for a minute as someone that's really into the work of CAP, okay? If you're already in existing debt, you need to think through a little bit about giving and tithing, because it should be, and people will help you in this, build it into part of a payment plan. Because folks wouldn't want to see people in existing debt get even into more debt through not thinking that through. Just think that's really important to add that in as a little bit. There, let's get back to the spacecraft, okay? Right, rich generosity, let's say, is the spacecraft, and tithing is the rocket that's used to blast the spacecraft into space. Okay, so tithing's the rocket there, and rich generosity is the spacecraft. The spacecraft can't get into space on its own. The rocket's needed for the initial blast to take that spacecraft through and beyond its normal atmosphere. Once the spacecraft clears the atmosphere, the rocket could be jettisoned because it wouldn't be needed any longer. Or maybe you want another picture. Right, so let's think of tithing as a diving board, okay? Now, if you've ever been down to the sea on a cold day, I don't know if you'd be down there today. You'd make it down to the seafront today. But if you've ever been down to the sea on a cold day, you'll see some would-be swimmers, right, dip their toes in the water and often run very quickly in the opposite direction. Others might wade in a little bit slowly, taking time to adjust to the cold temperature. But a diving board would have taken all that, shall I, shan't I, it would have taken all that process away, wouldn't it? You'd have used it to literally plunge right in, wouldn't you? And you'd already be swimming before you had time to think about the temperature. So, in this little sum up now, I'm going to ask three simple questions about giving, and I'm going to reflect on them in the light of what the Bible teaches. The first thing I'm going to ask is, what did Jesus teach? Well, in Matthew 5, often referred to as the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus makes a very interesting comment on the relationship between his own teaching and that of the Old Testament. He says, I haven't come to abolish the law, I've come to fulfill it. Yeah. He then goes on to say what he means by that, what he means by fulfilling the law. Because what he does is he starts to list one Old Testament law after another, and then he shows how you can go beyond the letter of that law to the very heart, the very spirit of it. For instance, he says, in the Old Testament it says, don't murder your brother, and then Jesus develops it into control your anger. He says, he takes the command, do not commit adultery, and he develops it to say, get your lust problem sorted out. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth becomes turn the other cheek. So in everything, Jesus makes the law. What he does is he makes it more radical, really. That's why he's so exciting. He doesn't quote a law on tithing in that sermon, but by his example and through all his teaching, he takes the principle of tithing and he makes it more radical. So he commends a widow for giving everything she had. He identifies that the main obstacle in a rich young ruler's life was his love of money, and he challenges him on that. On another occasion, Mary, she anoints his feet with a perfume so expensive it was worth a year's wages, and he commends her. And if you look quickly at Luke 11:42, he says in Luke 11:42, you can grab it from the seats if you want, the Bible's there, or have a quick look. Luke 11:42. He says, woe to you Pharisees, he says, Luke 11:42, on page 1043. Luke 11:42, he says, woe to you Pharisees, because you give God a tenth of your mint, rue, and all other kinds of garden herbs, but you neglect justice and the love of God. You should have practiced the latter without leaving the former undone. Without leaving the former undone. And the tithing is the rocket. Justice, love, compassion, mercy, and generosity are the spacecraft. So tithing is the springboard as well in which we can launch ourselves into real generosity. It's the starting point for taking the principle of tithing, and as Jesus always does, he extends it, he's extending it, he's stretching it, and he's growing it, and extending, stretching, and growing us as well in our trust in God. He does that in the process. For me, it's the way that Jesus shows how to embrace tithing without it becoming something legalistic. And that's really important. That's what he's doing. He's taking things and saying, look, don't get all legalistic about this. Let's make it more radical. Let's get to the heart of what the principle is all, of it is all about. And when you think of what he gave, when we think of Jesus and what he gave so that we might live, well, you don't look at the cross and start thinking about percentages, do you? So what did Jesus teach? And what did the apostles teach? The disciples. What did the disciples teach? Well, after the Gospels, tithing is never mentioned in the New Testament except in Hebrews when it's brought up as part of an historical discussion. However, Paul says in 1 Corinthians 16 verse 2 that each one should set aside a sum of money in proportion to their income on a regular basis. And put alongside what we said we could learn from what Jesus said and did, this suggests that we shouldn't really be too obsessed with percentages, but instead he encouraged those in Corinth that he was writing to at the time to excel in this grace of giving. Paul, James, and John have all got very strong things to say about the rich who refuse to share with the poor. In 2 Corinthians 9, verse 7, Paul tells us that God loves a cheerful giver. So not a giver who's under pressure from guilt, not giving out of guilt or compulsion or comparing themselves with someone else or legalism. They're not expecting a return on their 1,000 tickets. Just be free, says Paul, to be guided by God and challenged enough to step out more for God. So what did Jesus teach? What did the disciples teach? And what did the early church do? Okay, well, if you read Acts 2 and Acts 4 in your own time, you'll see that the level of generosity, their generosity there of the early church, taking Jesus' teaching on radical lifestyle seriously, they gave in a way that was so far removed from tithing to make it virtually redundant. Ivor Williams makes a really important point. He says, could it be that the early church actually had a head start in this level of giving because they were already used to tithing? You see how then that's the rocket that launches the spacecraft into a new atmosphere. You see how it can be then, about that rocket or the diving board we're talking about. And to repeat an earlier line, if we're going to journey towards Christian giving, then tithing is a good place to start. But the key, I think, and to quote it again and again and again, is the ability to do it without being legalistic. It's freeing, really, to hold together the command to tithe with Paul's exhortation that each person should give away what they have decided to give in their own heart to give. Each person should give what they have decided in their heart to give. It's holding those things together. Katie Williams, Kev's sister, Ivor's daughter, after a year after her A-levels, she went to work on an Oasis project with a small church in Uganda. The church was pastored by a guy called John Okello. Now, he's a man with a wonderful heart for the poor. John and his co-workers out there, they built this school. They built this school for orphans, children who would be destined for a life of hunger and a life of destitution. They had, through this school, they'd received love and education, which gave them a hope of employment. It gave them a better life. Now, after the initial contact between Katie and her father's church in Broadhaven, the church decides to support the work of the church out there in Uganda. It decides to do that on an ongoing basis. So one day, John sends an email to the church in Broadhaven, to Ivor, asking for urgent prayer. Now, the school had been built initially. It had been built on rented land. And an opportunist landlord had decided to take back the land. And not just the land, but he was going to take back the school building as well. So John and his team are determined to build another school. And they didn't want to make the same mistake twice. So this time they knew they should buy the land first. So they find a plot of land nearby, but it's going to cost £3,000. That was an enormous sum for this small church in Uganda. So Broadhaven Church, they printed John's email in their newsletter, and during a time of open prayer, they've got this guy called Tony, and he's up on this balcony in Broadhaven Church. They have a balcony there, and Tony's got this very to-the-point style of praying, let's say, okay? So the open prayer, God, he said, John Okello needs £3,000. He needs to buy some land and build a school. I pray he'll get the money. Amen. Great. Now, in the hall afterwards, they're having tea and coffee, as you do, and this couple come up to Ivor and they say they've been really moved by Tony's prayer and they wanted to give some money in response. Well, no problem, says Ivor. You decide how much you want to give. I'm sure the church will respond as well. We can send it over in one lump sum. They said no. They said no, you don't understand. We want to give the full £3,000. Now, they weren't the only people to speak to Ivor and Katie that morning. And at the end of the week, the church was able to send John Okello enough money to not only buy the land, but enough to build the school as well. And years on, that church and John, they're still in touch with Broadhaven and Ugandan Church. And that school for orphans is going on from strength to strength. It's incredible. There wasn't a discussion at a church meeting. People saw the need. They wanted to give. They responded generously. People gave from the heart. Ivor said later, it felt good. Very good. And over the years, he says, we began to practice giving in a deeper way. And the realization grew that it's good to give. Do you know why God loves a cheerful giver? Because a cheerful giver is someone who gets it. Someone who's discovered the very heart of the gospel. That God so loved the world that he gave his son. That Jesus so loved the world that he gave his life. And that same Jesus calls us to love and give and bless one another as he has loved us. It's a generous love. And as we give, we experience the life that we were created to live. It's like an engine that's been repaired and properly maintained and is now running beautifully. This is how we were meant to live. And Jesus says, therefore go and do likewise. Amen.